Welcome to another episode of LSHTM Viral. I'm Carl Byrne. These are confusing, uncertain times for us all, and juggling working from home, childcare, and homeschooling is an issue for many. Many people are asking how the pandemic is affecting children. How can we help them understand what is happening? And what effect is all of this having on their psychological well-being? On today's podcast, our three guests will be answering some of these questions. Professor James Logan, head of the Department of Disease Control at LSHTM and director of ARCTEC, is spearheading an exciting new campaign, Hands on COVID, to assist parents and guardians in helping children understand coronavirus in an age-appropriate way and develop useful strategies to help them cope with the difficult times we currently find ourselves in. Lydia Monks is a best-selling children's author and illustrator who worked with James to create Dr. Dog, a caring character aimed at educating and providing reassurance to young children. Psychologist and broadcaster Dr. Linda Papadopoulos has lent her expertise to develop resources designed to not only educate, but support and reassure children, as well as parents and teachers during this difficult time. Thank you all for joining me today. Linda, if I could start with you. Children are less likely to be physically affected by COVID-19, but there are valid concerns about their psychological well-being during lockdown. Are there specific issues that children may be experiencing during lockdown which could differ from the experience of adults?
I think the most fundamental difference is their lack of understanding. I think what tends to happen is that as adults, we can take responsibility for that. We know the difference between a good source of information and a bad source of information. And because of that, we're able to kind of manage stress in a better way. What we also do as adults is sometimes we try and protect kids from, you know, especially from difficult subjects. Now, the consequence of that, unfortunately, is kids kind of may feel concerned, they may feel that there's something going on, because it's understandable they'll pick up on that, but they don't have the resources to get the information. And if in some ways parents are protecting them from what's going on, then that will often lead them to kind of creating certain errors in their own heads about what's going on. Did they cause this? Are they doing something wrong? So I think one of the fundamental things that we often speak about with parents is speak to your kids about what's happening. You don't have to go into detail of how the virus works and how many people are dying. Instead, what you need to say is something to the effect of, you know, this is an illness that we're all working on, the whole world at the same time, but there are things that we can do as individuals. So again, this sense of like, this is what you can do, because that's sort of the big thing with uncertainty. You know, get them to think about the things that they can deal with as opposed to things that they can't. So speak about hand washing, speak about eating healthy food, and really critically, get them to speak about their concerns with you when they have them.
Whenever you're talking to children, is there any method you could suggest that would stop children feeling as if they're being patronized by their parents?
Yeah, so I think you need to be age specific, right? So the way you're going to speak to your 8-year-old is different to how you're going to speak to your 14-year-old, obviously, right? So I think one of the things that's really great is kind of allowing them to lead the conversation. So, you know what? I'm sure you're hearing everyone talk about Corona. How are you feeling about it? What are your questions? Because I think that will in some way allow you to kind of reflect not just what they're feeling, but also kind of validate it, right? So instead of kind of saying, this is what I think you should know, opening up the conversation to what is it that you think you need to know.
And is there anything that parents can do to help children deal with loneliness during this time when they aren't able to see their friends?
Again, you know, I've always kind of, you know, we always speak about this sort of, you know, five a day with fruits and vegetables. I always think we need to kind of have an emotional five a day with kids, right? And one of those five a day is absolutely those kind of social interactions. Now, we're very lucky, as everyone said, that this has happened at a time where, you know, we don't have to be actually socially isolated. You've got to be physically isolated, but socially, thank goodness we don't. But I think it's about getting them to be creative, right? So the problem is that, you know, we know that it's not so much about time spent online, it's time well spent. So if they're kind of just mindlessly scrolling through their screens, that's not great. So maybe kind of speak to them about structuring their time to kind of feel less lonely. Who have you spoken to today? Have you watched a movie with a friend? Have you been able to kind of play a game online? You know, get them to think about that sort of actually active interaction online. And if they haven't thought of certain things, there's like lots of great ideas that you can help them come up with. And there's a lot of resources online that you can help direct them to.
Fantastic. Linda covered this a little bit, talking about helping children understand what's going on during this pandemic. And James, this is an area that you've been working on recently. Could you tell us a little bit about what you've been doing?
Sure, yeah. So we've launched a campaign to support families and children during COVID-19. So, you know, as Linda was saying, it is really, really important that we talk to children. And actually, you know, many children have the capacity to understand the situation, and we can't hide it. We can't pretend this isn't happening. They're going to be aware of things changing in their lives. And I think now more than ever, the younger generation want to be and should be more engaged in public health. So we've launched a campaign which is around providing information about COVID-19 to help sort of interpret some of the guidelines that are coming through from the government, but importantly also helping to support parents in terms of how they talk to their children. And so we've done some wonderful work with Dr. Linda on supportive sort of messaging and top tips on how to talk to children, and also to recognize when children might be struggling a little bit. You know, I have a daughter, she's 4 years old, and she, you know, she's perfectly capable of understanding what the virus is, that it's a germ and that sort of thing, and is interested in it. So it's really getting the right level of information to her without worrying her, and noticing some behaviors in her that, for example, she has regressed to some behaviors that she grew out of a year ago, a couple of years ago, that just have appeared all of a sudden. And so clearly, you know, we thought, oh, this maybe is just her acting up or something, but actually it's probably more likely due to the situation which has changed for her. And that's what we've found has helped as well, is being honest, being open, asking how they're feeling, asking lots of questions and letting them ask lots of questions as well. But for younger children, that's a lot more difficult than for older children. And so we've come up with a way of providing a much more sort of reassuring approach to that, which is why we've been working with the wonderful Lydia Monks.
And Lydia, you worked with James to create this character, Dr. Dog, who's aimed at educating and providing reassurance to young children. Did you find working with scientists different from what you would normally be doing?
Yeah, it is a little bit, but it's the same job. I'm given words and I have to translate them into pictures. So it's actually not that different. I mean, what we're dealing with is different. It's not all dragons and ladybirds and things, but it's not dissimilar, actually. It didn't feel a million miles away from what I normally do.
And although we're not dealing with dragons here, you could view coronavirus as a real life monster.
That's it. And we did talk about that a bit, didn't we, James, about how we didn't want to focus on the bad part of it. We didn't want it to be too much of a baddie. We had to think of some sort of positive messages from it, because we don't want the children to be scared, or even more scared than they might be already. So yes, we had to kind of think of a way around that, how to tackle something that's quite unnerving and scary situation, how to make it sort of, you know, friendly, you know, and approachable and reassuring. It was that message we were trying to get across.
And Lydia, where did you get the inspiration for Dr. Dog?
Well, James was talking to me about how they were using dogs to sniff out the virus. So in the initial conversation, he was just chatting about what he'd been working on and things. So one of the things was sniffer dogs. And because we were thinking of all this very quickly, you know, it was quite a quick turnaround, wasn't it, James? So we wanted to get out there quite quickly. So it was literally off the back of that first conversation. You were talking about the hands and you were talking about how you were working with sniffer dogs. And I just thought Dr. Dog's quite a catchy name. So we just went with that. I mean, normally I work on books for, you know, a year, at least 6 months. So this was days in the making. So yes, it was from that, really.
James, the other character you came up with for this project is called Hans. Could you tell us a little bit about them?
Hans is a character for slightly older children. The idea is Hans, the helping hand, almost sort of the face of reassurance and sort of accurate information. You know, there's obviously links to hand washing and hygiene and that sort of thing. So we thought it was a fun character. Hans is quite a cheeky character as well. We try to keep everything lighthearted and engaging for a younger audience. And that seems to have worked really, really well. And what's fantastic is we've been working with Twinkle, which is an online publishing house that people can access all the documents that we're producing on their free, which is wonderful. And they've been very, very popular. We worked with a PR company called Ketchum to develop Hans, who have been incredibly supportive, not only in helping us to come up with that character, but also supporting our social media as well. So we've been doing some social media analytics to look at what people are talking about online, what kind of worries they have, and how we can translate that into messages and documents that can help to support people. But really, for the younger children, it was Lydia Monk who came up with Dr. Dog. And the idea there, as she was saying earlier, was to have a much more sort of a softer approach, much more reassuring approach, a character that the children can perhaps relate to and sort of look to for support. I think the language in that book as well is of that sort of level as well.
James, what are you hoping to achieve from this project?
Essentially, what we're hoping to do is to provide support and education. And we're sort of taking this a few steps further now. So we got out quite quickly some basic information about coronavirus through Dr. Dog and Hans, in terms of explaining what the virus is. And then working with Dr. Linda and also with Professor Tanya Byron, we got this supporting material for parents to help them to know how to talk to children, how to deal with this situation. We're now, with lots of other colleagues at the London School, we're putting together more materials around COVID-19 so that perhaps slightly older children can engage and understand a bit more about the science behind the pandemic and about the virus itself. And then we're extending that a bit further as well to look at public health in general. So we're going to be covering things like vaccines and antimicrobial resistance and vector-borne diseases like malaria and dengue and that sort of thing. And actually, this is sort of growing all the time because, of course, this isn't just a problem in the UK. This is a problem worldwide, and we specialise in working in developing countries. So there's another piece which is much more international, because these families that are living with COVID-19 will be living with other diseases as well, like malaria and dengue and cholera and all sorts of other things. So actually, the communication piece there is around COVID-19 preventative measures, but also things like using a bed net and using a repellent to protect yourself, tipping out breeding sites of mosquitoes. Because, you know, I think what's going to happen is that the control that's normally done for those other diseases is going to diminish somewhat, which means that families are going to be at much higher risk of these other diseases. There was an article in The Guardian just the other day talking about the effect on malaria, and that's likely to be quite a big impact on malaria. So the responsibility for protecting families and children is probably going to fall quite often to the household level. And so it's important we get these messages across to the household. And so we've got a really fantastic program, which is also getting to those people is difficult. So a program of using online methods where that's appropriate, but also using methods such as messaging through mobile phones. So people can use voice activation if they can't read, and they can just listen to messages.
And I'd assume as well, a lot of this has to be translated into other languages in order to be effective.
Yeah, absolutely. So we will be looking to translate and repurpose some of the things we've done here. We're just having a discussion with Lydia about making Dr. Dog a little bit more international as well, hopefully.
Lydia, is there much difference between writing a book, say, for a British audience compared to designing something for an international audience?
I don't think so. Not with something like this. I think we're all pretty much having the same experience. If I'm doing a normal children's book, there's some things they don't have in other countries, they might not have an equivalent for. There's even certain animals I'm not allowed to write. We're not allowed to write about hedgehogs and things like that normally because they're very UK-based. But I think for something like this, I think we're all sharing a very similar experience. So it probably can translate quite well, I would have thought.
And do you think there's lessons that can be learnt from this, thinking more broadly about COVID-19, that could be translated to adults as well?
Well, definitely. I mean, I'm sure, as we were talking before when we started the project, I think parents will be picking up on what and the things they're reading for their children, so they can learn. So, I mean, that's quite basic stuff, but it is also quite reassuring for parents as well as the children, I would have thought.
Yeah, definitely. And that's quite often what we do when we're looking at some of these sort of social impact and sort of behaviour change type programmes that we do on vector-borne diseases. You know, targeting children is quite often a good way to get education and messaging to parents as well. They sort of, you know, they come home from school and say, no, we shouldn't be doing that because X, Y, and Z, because they've learned that at school or through messaging. But Linda, I think you've got obviously experience of working with adults as well from this point of view. We're focusing on children and trying to support parents as well, but from an adult point of view, it's also a difficult situation to cope with.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's kind of the holy trinity of anxiety. So you have uncertainty, and then you've got the threat, and then, you know, you've got this sort of old school response where you're primed to look at a novel threat and want to find out as much information. And then you have this technological advancement where it's literally everywhere today. So it's kind of a perfect storm, which is precisely, I think, why we are seeing these huge rises, unsurprisingly, in anxiety, in self-checking behaviors, and hypervigilance to do with health. And I think that hypervigilance to do with health, whereas understandable and actually functional to a point, can actually become very dysfunctional if left in sort of unmoderated. So I think, again, the discussions very much need to be couched in what can you do that's useful, what can you worry about that's useful and cope with, and what is unuseful worry, right? What is the kind of worry that's actually detrimental? So I think also one of the things I've been telling you about a lot of media outlets I've been speaking to is kind of, you know, seeking out some good news. You need to kind of curate your consciousness, right? So your consciousness in a lot of ways is curated for you these days, not just by algorithms, but by your own fear. So you need to kind of take responsibility. So I always make a point of reading at least one good news story a day. You know, there's a few kind of great resources out there, even about COVID, you know, and kind of remembering, you know, that, you know, never in history have we all come together. There's literally hundreds of millions of researchers and medics and, you know, health practitioners uniformly looking for something. So we will find it. This will change because, you know, we keep speaking about immunizations, but a cure is probably going to come before there are some semblance of control, given, you know, the amount of trials that are out there, the amount of kind of similar drugs they can try and piggyback on. So it's about kind of accepting what I can do, but also remembering that, you know, we're all looking out for each other with this, which I think is key. And I think, again, this whole parent-child thing, you need to remember to model appropriate behavior for your kid, right, as well. So a lot of taking care of them is taking care of you. And, you know, we've spoken about this before as well, but keeping the basics going, keeping routine going, keeping connected, and also looking out for others. There's nothing that frees you more from your own problems than doing for other people. So kind of priming people to kind of think about the illness in this way is a great idea.
And that, in fact, that's one of the things that's first on your top tips is look after your own mental health. And, you know, I know from myself, my own point of view, I suffer from anxiety. I have done for many years, and I have OCD as well. And you can imagine that during this time, it's gone through the roof. And I've learned how to cope with that. I've lived with it for a very long time, and I know how to cope with it quite well, but it has got worse for sure within this time period. And I'm very, very conscious about how that comes across to my daughter. And so I try and keep tabs on my own behavior around my daughter as well, because you don't want that to sort of spill over.
Brilliant. No, and I'm actually glad you raised OCD, because I feel that there's been some discussion, but kind of not enough, because it's almost this bit of a joke, oh, we've all got OCD now, but actually it can be hugely debilitating. You know, as anyone who suffers from OCD knows, having this bully that lives on your shoulder whispering in your ear, you know, that you're in danger all the time is very worrying. And having that kind of bully be validated by all these sort of health campaigns. So I feel strongly that we should obviously continue with the hand washing and everything else, but at the same time, recognizing what is enough, and perhaps there's scope getting people to understand that obviously, if you know, you know, washing in between kind of touching different things, or if you've been out, is great, but not needing to sit there watching TV, putting hand sanitizer on, you know, every 20 minutes, you know, throughout the course of the evening, which a lot of people invariably are going to be doing, because you feel more protected, even though you're probably not, you know, the solution then becomes part of the problem.
For me, anyway, it's a control thing as well. You know, I feel like if I'm doing these things, I'm in control of that. I can't be in control of what's going on out there, but I can be in control of that. But of course, it's really helped.
And I think, you know, this feeling of being in control is fundamental again, but it's about directing to absolutely what can I control, but where does that line end? Where does it become functional? Where does it become dysfunctional? So I think discussions like this are really important, because, you know, we're all kind of figuring it out as we go along. The families are, you know, we're all doing this. So it's great to have a chance to talk about it.
And as well, this situation has maybe exacerbated some of the problems that people face with, say, Instagram or Facebook, where they're looking at all of their friends who have these perfect lives, but it's only people showing what they want online rather than the true reality of it.
You know, that's always been the problem with sort of social media, that you tend, I mean, there's all this wonderful research on it around, we post when we're on a high and we surf when we're on a low. So we post and we've been to these amazing places, and we surf and scroll when we're like sitting there eating, you know, yesterday's leftovers in our pajamas. And it's this differential that makes us feel bad. But again, I think we need to look for things that are connecting us in this rather than setting us apart. And I think some genuineness is what's very much needed. And so I always applaud people that come up, you know, that are able to go on social media and say, yeah, you know, we're all supposed to be learning a new language, playing a new instrument, and writing our next, you know, best-selling novel while in lockdown. But actually, I'm just managing to kind of have a semblance of normality. And I think being honest and realistic about expectations is really, really key.
I know from what I've been doing, occasionally posting, you know, some videos of my garden with lovely
foxes
running around. Yeah. four baby foxes, and we've got kite nesting in the tree and all sorts of things, which looks very idyllic in this lovely weather. But I am trying to balance it with, boy, have I had a hard day today. Am I glad that it's Friday? I think we just all said that when we joined this. I think that for me was really important as well with the work that we're doing for children, in the sense that you have to keep that sense of reality. You know, one of the things I sort of learned, I guess, in doing this was that children have, of a young age anyway, have these tendencies to have magical thoughts, that things are created through magic, which is wonderful in so many ways. But in a situation like this, it could lead to them, as I understand, thinking, I think Lydia said it early on, they might think that they are responsible for what's happened, maybe because they didn't wash their hands after they went to the loo, that it caused the germs to spread and created the whole thing. You know, you don't know what's going on inside their heads. And that's why some of the information that we've created in Dr. Dog, the book as well, we've been very sort of honest in telling the story of COVID-19 and what's happened, but in a nice sort of reassuring way. And that is something I also learned, is just reassuring children about, you know, we're all in this together, and mum and dad, or mum or mums and dads, or whoever carers are there to support each other. We're going to look after each other, and we're going to get each other through this, and providing that support and within the family is so important.
So James, if you'd one takeaway message, what would that be?
I think the message is that we should be talking about this a lot, and particularly to children, and listening. So I think the communication at this time has never been so important, as well as reassurance.
Again, the same question to you, Linda. Is there one takeaway message from this?
I guess my takeaway would be that we have a choice of, you know, seeing this, you know, in a negative light, or seeing kind of the fact that we're all in this together, right? This is the stuff we're going to speak to our grandkids about. So how do you rise to the occasion? Well, you know, absolutely. You know, as James was saying, you open the communication, you listen, you learn. But I think, you know, sort of being kind to each other and having this sense of community and showing up for each other, whether that means I'm staying home to protect you, or I'm washing my hands to protect each other, or I'm just kind of, you know, putting myself out there to help in the community. I think the more connected we feel, the more likely we are to kind of get through this positively.
I'll ask you as well, Lydia, have you got one takeaway message you'd like to tell people?
I think it's what Linda was saying. We are all having the same experience. Everyone's going through it. And I think to take one each day as it comes, and, you know, getting through just one day at a time is enough at the moment. Because I think I start to worry when you start to look at the future and think, well, all the what ifs that start to come in. I think just to get through one day at a time is enough for me at the moment. I'm not going to try and worry about what's coming next.
Just to add to that as well, I think that acknowledging that it's okay that you don't feel all right sometimes, and that it's difficult. And really, that's a big part of what this campaign is all about as well, is to say, We know it's hard. It's hard. It's hard for me. It's hard for everybody on this call now, and hard for everybody at home. So hopefully some of the materials that we're producing in some little way just help with that.
And James, if people want to read about Dr. Dog or find out more about hands, where can they find out about this?
So if people want to know more about Dr. Dog and hands, we've got lots of activity on social media. There's some Twitter accounts and things as well. And follow me and Lydia for Dr. Dog stuff, but go to the Twinkle website. You Google Twinkle and you can search online there. You can get a free code to access it, and so everything is downloadable, and we've got some materials up there already for weeks to come. There will be more and more materials going on there, some around COVID-19, but some around just general public health, with lots of information, education, activities, things that you can download and do with children at home to keep them entertained, if nothing else, but at the same time, learning a bit about public health in a time when it's so important.
And Twinkle is T-W-I-N-K-L?
That's right, Twinkle without the E, yeah.
And would you like to give out your Twitter handle so people can follow you to find out more?
My Twitter handle is Prof. James Logan.
I'm just Lydia Monks on Twitter and on Facebook and Instagram and everywhere else.
It's Dr. Linda P, both on Twitter and on Instagram. And yeah, so the podcast speaks about these things, but also on my Instagram, I'm posting videos, just short 2-minute videos a few times a week on ways to cope with COVID, to cope with anxiety around it, to speak to your kids about it, to have to speak to your boss about it. So I think, you know, that's been sort of a useful thing, because they're just little snippets. And again, it's the stuff that we speak about, James, as well. And we're trying to figure out, you know, what are the top tips in terms of thinking, but also, you know, in terms of doing. And I think, you know, just having a few of those things in your back pocket just makes things a bit more manageable.
And also, I need to point out as well that Lydia does some wonderful videos on her Instagram and social media on how to draw some of the characters, like the ladybird, what ladybird heard and things like that, that people can watch and try to draw the characters herself.
I think that's the perfect place to end this podcast. Thank you, everyone. That was Professor James Logan, Lydia Monks, and Dr. Linda Papadopoulos. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends, family, and colleagues. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, I've been Carl Byrne, and you've been listening to LSHTM Viral.